Market View on Money FM 89.3.
Well, after the unforgettable impact of the COVID-19 pandemic on global markets in the first half, it's understandable if we find ourselves scratching our heads, licking our wounds, and wondering how best to prepare for a second half that has the potential to be as unpredictable as the last 6 months. But in Citi Private Bank's second half outlook, strategists advocate that fear can actually turn into prosperity, which in turn could yield some possible opportunities, at least for investors who are looking to be thrown a bone. Today on Market View, we're joined again by Mr. Ken Peng, who is the Asia Pacific investment strategist at Citi Private Bank. He joins us all the way from Hong Kong to share with us what Citi Private is tracking as we head into the last 6 months of the year. Ken, thank you so much for joining us today. Hope you and your loved ones have stayed in good health out in Hong Kong, and welcome back to the show. Good afternoon.
Thank you very much. Good evening, and thank you for having me.
All right. So, Ken, let's talk first about the theme of Citi Private Bank heading into the second half, from fear to prosperity. And one central tenet behind the outlook is not to look at this as a continued economic downturn, but the start, actually, of a new economic cycle. Can you talk our listeners through why this is so and why people might benefit to think of it using this framework?
Okay, so first of all, in the first quarter of this year, and actually all through April, really, we've had an unprecedented collapse of economic activity, record amount of unemployment, and that ended the previous cycle. So that's for sure. Since March, we've had unprecedented amount of policy stimulus. And I think that has a lot to do with why we're more confident that we're going to see a new cycle starting in the second half of this year, right? The amount of fiscal policy, meaning government spending, Singapore in particular, right? The fiscal stimulus plan is worth 12% of GDP. That's like 3-4 years of growth. U.S., something similar in terms of relative to the size of GDP. Other countries are smaller, but generally speaking, across the globe, we're looking at about over $6 trillion of fiscal stimulus. And that is unprecedented. That's probably going to give us enough ammunition to get things going again. And monetary policy is even larger, right? The Fed expanded its balance sheet over the past 3 months by $3 trillion. And, last time it took 5 years to do that. So what that does is it pushes money. It basically bought all those bonds, low-risk bonds from investors, and pushes investors towards taking higher-risk, higher-return investments. And I think these are two key tenets that gives us the confidence that we'll see the beginning of a new cycle.
Now, I'm glad you brought that up, Ken, because markets did find much support from these fiscal and monetary authorities, and stocks even in some markets came within striking distance of making back all of those first quarter losses. But some might argue that this unprecedented stimulus might be causing distortions in markets, asset prices and valuations. We've seen P.E. ratios pretty much called into question because of the collapse in earnings expectations. What's your view on this? Should markets and should ordinary investors be worried that there are some distortions that might actually trouble markets down the road?
Yeah, well, I think that's a legitimate worry. We worry about that as well. But I think at the moment, this is something that we are not really focusing. I don't think the market is really focusing on it either. At the moment, it's about recovery and reopening. Whether that's delayed by 1 month or delayed by 2 months, that's acceptable risk to us, right? And so the key story here is that each month in the U.S., for example, you'll have several million people coming back to work. That's a lot of economic activity, looking at China. For example, the PMI data that was just released this morning show that new export orders are actually rebounding in a pretty significant way, and that's very important for a region like Asia, where intra-region trade drives a lot of economic activity. So if we can make the assumption of, say, in the next 12 months, a vaccine will be found, or medical solution to this COVID crisis will be found, then we can count on the, economies reopening. And that's a bigger driving force, going forward for this recovery. Let's say in a year or so, if we run into issues about governments having to borrow a lot more money, long-term interest rates rising, that's something we need to worry about later on. But I think, you know, at the moment, the recovery is the main story.
All right. Ken, in Citi's outlook, there was some special mention, actually, of Singapore being lauded as a market with potential upside. You did note also, if I'm not mistaken, EPS growth potentially at about 12%. But can you help our listeners flesh out a little bit more what could set Singapore apart from other markets in the second half? Basically, if this was a team of potential investment opportunities, what's Singapore's role in that particular portfolio?
Sure. Let me take a step back, right? So
sure.
What does a new cycle mean for investments, right? It means that because up to now, all that rally that you saw from this the March low, most of it in terms of market cap, right, went to these long-term growth, tech, healthcare, these guys that people love for long-term investments, right? And those are still fine. We still like them, but it's left like one half the market. Well, actually, more than one half, if you count the number of companies, back in the dust, right? So looking at Singapore's market, look at STI, for example, 30 stocks, right? Only 3 are positive this year, year to date, right? So the other 27 are all still pretty deep in the water. So what that means is that Singapore is a bit more cyclical, right? It's driven more by industry, banks, REITs, asset heavy, and it's more dependent on economic activity recovering, and I think this is what we're likely to see in the second half, and that makes Singapore a kind of a unique place because of the cyclicality of the market in general. I mean, compared to the March lows, you know, the S&P is up some over 30%, the Singapore is up 8%. Right, and Singapore is still about 27% away from the beginning of the year, and so I think this leaves more space for recovery to take place in this market, and in particular, we actually think REITs are interesting in this environment, because I think the businesses that are involved in REITs are likely to be able to maintain their rent income and their revenues as we see more reopening, right? I think the Singaporean banks are also interesting because they tend to be the healthier ones in this region, and I think they're likely to be one of the key beneficiaries of recovery in the second half.
Now, the other side of investing, or the other thesis that some investors might pose that might support REITs and banks also, is because they are seen also as dividend plays. As you know, Singapore tends to have a bit of a reputation also as a more defensive market with steady dividends. But we've seen throughout the last 6 months, actually, a number of companies across the world, they've been challenged to maintain their dividend payouts or distributions, Ken, because of the need to sustain cash during the COVID-19 uncertainty. What's your view on the defensive or dividend potential in Singapore? Will this continue into the second half, or do you think that the challenges will continue to persist for some of these defensive stalwarts here? Let's throw the telcos in as well.
Well, look, I think the reason some companies have been, well, especially banks, are limited in terms of by regulators to curb dividend payments is because of capital requirements. Right? I think Singapore banks stands fairly relatively safe in terms of capital requirements. So I think the regulator there has less of a concern, less of an imperative to try to restrict dividend payments by the banks. And you know, I mentioned REITs before. I think the prospect of rent default is actually fairly low in Singapore, and generally speaking, when you look at the Singapore market, we're looking at somewhere around 4.8% dividend yield, and when you look back through history, when we get to this high, when we get to above 44.5%, for example, the 12-month returns have been very positive. Talking about 20% plus type of returns over the following 12 months when the dividend yield gets above 4.5%, right? So this is a pretty I think it's a pretty convincing story that we have a recovery and the dividend yield still at this level.
So still a sustained outlook, at least, for Singapore heading in the second half. We'll have to leave that, you know, this conversation for another time, but we'd like to thank Mr. Ken Peng, who's the Asia-Pacific Investment Strategist at Citi Private Bank, for taking some time out of your schedule to join us today on Money FM 89.3. Do stay safe and stay in good health out there in Hong Kong, and we wish you a good afternoon, sir.
Thank you. It's a pleasure. Thank you.
Before acting on the information on Money FM, please consider if it's suitable for your own investment objectives, financial situation, and risk tolerance. To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download the SPH radio app available on Google Play or the App Store.
Thank you for your time, sir.